to left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot saved, made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, let's get at it. Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddledome on this Tuesday, February 4th. It's Steinberg along with you from the Hot Stove Lounge here at the Dome. And this hour of Flames Talk is underway on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. We got a busy, busy hour ahead. Daily Flames Roundtable we'll get to a little bit later on, and lots to touch on when it comes to this Flames group as they move towards their Four Nations break. Three games to go before they break for 2 weeks. But it's a Tuesday, and it's time to say hello to our NHL insider. It's time to check in with Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. And Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff, DailyFaceoff.com, Amazon, and a whole lot more. Mr. Saravalli, glad to hear you're feeling better, my friend. How are we doing?
Doing all right, Pat. How you doing?
I'm doing well, and it's kind of that, you get that feel that this last week before the break is a big one for the Flames as they move towards 2 weeks off, and they've got some injuries that they're nursing, and also a lot of people in this market still buzzing about Thursday's trade with Philadelphia. And, you know, you and I spoke on Friday. We broke that one down on Friday, and we're looking back at the deal, and one of the things I asked you then was if the Flames are done, if the Flames are still looking at making themselves better and making more moves. Now that a few more days have passed and we're about a month out from the trade deadline, where do you see the Flames in terms of their ability or desire to make a couple more additions between now and the deadline?
I think they're definitely open to it. I don't see them being one of the more aggressive teams in the league. I would classify Calgary as curious. And that's in a good way. If they're going to go out and make another move, it's likely to be a move that they would make regardless of whatever their playoff position is. I don't necessarily see them going out to do something to ensure that they get in, more so a lot along the lines of the deal that they just made. Players that fit the current age scheme of this team, players that can be under team control. I don't see the Flames spending assets on a big name rental, but I could see them in a lowercase way as we get closer to March 7th and it's deadline day itself, and you could add a third pair defenseman for next to nothing. I could see that for sure, but between now and then, I think they'd take a much more conservative posture and still engage, but not necessarily be the aggressor.
You know, you and I have talked about Dylan Cousins a few times, and I think that, you know, both on the same page, that certainly the Flames have checked in there and definitely would have interest because of the type of player we're talking about. And one of the things that you and I have discussed and you've brought up is, do they have the horses to be able to bring a player like that in if Buffalo was even shopping? And yet Cousins' name continues to be linked to the Flames. But in your mind or of your knowledge, has anything changed in that regard?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, I have zero doubt that the Flames have been on the case, but I have a ton of doubt and reservation as to whether or not the Flames actually have the goods to the point that you were making to be able to pull a deal like that off. Now, there is certainly some risk involved, given that I think we're all still trying to figure out what Dylan Cousins is and what kind of producer he could consistently be in the NHL. But that said, the ask is going to be high because he has gotten to a level that, earned him the contract that he's playing on. And the Sabres, I think their biggest fear going through this season and this process has been, we don't want to trade away the next Sam Reinhart, the next huge piece of a team that goes on to become something really big. And I think that's certainly what has tempered the Sabres from really making any move so far this year.
What about Carson Soucy? I know that name has popped up onto the radar here over the last number of hours, and a potential move out of Vancouver. Is Soucy a guy that you could see being a flip, being a fit rather, being flipped to the Flames?
I don't necessarily understand where Vancouver is coming from here. They just get Marcus Pettersson. Obviously, they're a believer in him, having given up a pick that could ultimately end up being pretty valuable in the first round.
Yep.
And they finally, it seems like they're kind of improving their defense. Why would you want to then erode the depth that it, you know, that you have, the little depth that you have, and go out and trade Carson Soucy at a time when his value is probably the lowest that it's been? Doesn't make a ton of sense to me, but nonetheless, that seems to be the position that we've arrived in. When it comes to the Flames, I mean, I could see it. I could see Carson Soucy being a fit on like 25 teams in the league.
Yeah. Yep.
He's a big guy that I think at times, you know, can play a game that really lends itself well to the playoffs. And I think you saw that last year. I think the inconsistency that he's shown this year has more so been a product of the environment that he's played in with that team and the other pieces around him on that blue line that are shaky, as opposed to more of a direct correlation to Carson Soucy's game itself.
Last one on the Flames. Your latest trade targets board is out over at Flames, Daily Faceoff, and Flames goaltender Dan Vladar is still on that list. He's the one Flames player that is on your trade targets list at dailyfaceoff.com. He comes in at number 27, Frank. What's your read on where this story is headed, and has that read changed over the last number of weeks or months?
Hasn't really changed. My read is he's also the only goalie, if I'm not mistaken, in my top 30. The goalie market is thin. We've talked about that there really aren't very many teams looking. Even the Carolina Hurricanes right now, I don't think, are searching for a goalie. And so there's limited destinations or landing spots. And obviously this year for Vladar has not played out from a numbers perspective the way that he would have hoped. That will also limit some of his contractual opportunities, not necessarily in terms of potential suitors if he were to hit the market, but definitely in terms of financial impact.
Yeah.
This season has not helped, which... If yep. you're looking at it from the Flames' perspective, maybe that's an opportunity or opening to re-sign him on the cheap. I haven't had any indication yet that that's something that his camp is willing to consider. They seem to think that he's better than what his numbers indicate and that he's deserving of a mid-range NHL goalie payday, which I'm just not seeing, but that's neither here nor there. When it comes to trading him, I think the Flames, the only way they do so is if they get something that allows them to part ways. Yes, not just to get a look at Cooley at the NHL level, but to say, hey, like, we're not doing it just to trade him. If we can get a third round pick, what we gave up to get him, that makes sense. I doubt that there's going to be a better market than that. Like, I don't see something developing where all of a sudden the Flames are going to get a second round pick. I think a third is probably pretty reasonable. And I don't view him and his market all that different than Jake Allen and the Montreal Canadiens last year trading him to New Jersey. The difference right. here being that Vladar is a pending UFA as opposed to a guy with one additional year of term left. But the Canadians were willing to retain to make it happen. So it's an interesting market. I'm real curious to see whether or not over the next 4+ weeks we have a larger goalie market develop, because we've still got a situation where there's a bunch of guys in a bunch of markets that are unsigned. And there's other guys I could add to the trade board. I could add Vitek Vanacek or John Gibson or Karel Vemelka or, you know, even to a lesser extent, Connor Ingram, whoever it might be. There's tons of different goalies that I think could move that there just hasn't been a teaming market for it.
Right. He's Frank Saravalli. He's our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us on Tuesdays here on Flames Talk, and he joins us right now to kick off the hour. The number one name on your trade target list, and this not is not necessarily or at all related to the Flames, but just overall, number one is Brock Nelson of the New York Islanders. How much of a price is Nelson going to command here over the next month or so, Frank?
I think a pretty decent one. I'm thinking first round pick plus. He's the premier rental center available this year. And beyond that, when you really take a look at his game, and I went through this on a player profile, which is linked in the story, and looked at his traits and what he does well, looked at a lot of his video from shifts this season, his numbers are down. And I was trying to figure out, okay, is this a guy who, you know, the age curve is catching up to? And I think the answer is no, he's moving just as well as he has been. But the reason his numbers are down is because the New York Islanders' power play is downright dreadful. It's scary how bad it is. And so he's seen such a precipitous drop in that power play, has seen such a precipitous drop in production that it's crushed his overall season and numbers. So it's been a tough contract year for Brock Nelson in that sense. That said, I don't think his play has really largely changed. And so I do think there will be demand there. And whether that's coming from Minnesota or Winnipeg or Colorado or pick a team that really needs that second line center punch, I think the New York Islanders are going to be well suited to cash in and take advantage of this opportunity in time with both him and Kyle Palmieri and others if they want to dig further on their roster. This Matt Barzal injury, to me, should crystallize the posture of the Islanders for the deadline period. It should have been crystal clear before this, but they had a 7-game winning streak, and I think all of a sudden everyone started to get excited, like, oh, could this team make the playoffs? Do not twist yourself into a pretzel trying to, you know, contort yourself and squint to find a way in, because even if they were to get in, the New York Islanders would only be fooling themselves. They need a massive change, and to not sell off with some of these pending UFAs would be malfeasance.
Anyone else on that list that you've really got your eye on right now, Frank? Any of those other top trade targets that you know, you're more dialed in on as we're speaking right now than maybe some others?
Not particularly, because there's been so much trade activity that I really feel like a lot of teams this week have taken a deep breath and a step back to say, okay, we've got some more time to consider here with Four Nations Faceoff. Doesn't seem like there's an imminent factor on any of the guys that are on the board that, hey, this guy's going to move before Friday, which for whatever reason has become trade day du jour over the last few weeks. But, I'm not sensing anything necessarily front burner today that must happen.
Okay. Frank Saravalli's with us. He's our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us on Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. A few other league-wide issues, and just your reaction on a 10-game ban, 10-game suspension for Ryan Hartman of the Minnesota Wild for what he pulled against Ottawa a couple nights ago. What was your reaction to 10 games and just the overall feel of what we saw there?
Well-deserved. Look, that's not a hockey play. And I think we can all, anyone who's spent any time around the game as a fan or played or whatever it might be, whether it's a bang-bang play or a player who takes a poor angle on a hit, catches a head, I think we can all understand where a player's coming from and assume that he's not looking to cause carnage. When it comes to this, this is a different scenario. You've got a player in a vulnerable position after taking a draw with his head down, and you take his helmet and you smash his face into the ice. There's no explainable, redeemable quality to this play that I think, you know, you can point to and say, oh, that just heat of the moment kind of thing. You've got to have better control than that. And too often, now suspended five times in his career, Ryan Hartman has just crossed the line. And this was the most egregious one yet. And I hope that not just with the 10 games, but with the $487,000 that'll be missing from his pay over the next few weeks, that that message will be delivered, because there's really no place in the game for a sequence like that one. That's intent to injure and nothing else.
Do we have any idea in terms of, like, the appeal process is so interesting, because it first goes to...
It's so broken.
Rightly, it goes to Gary Bettman first, and you really, really have to put on some big time heavy glasses and then squint to see how he's going to overturn a suspension from his own league. But do you see any way that Hartman appeals this?
I do see a way, just to try and recoup money, sure, because it is such a big, you know, fine or forfeiture of salary that comes with that suspension. Outside of that, I don't really see a case for him to appeal. I don't see anything precedential or process-wise that seems to be broken. My guess here was 8 games. If you draw a circle on a sheet of paper, I mean, 10 is certainly within the realm of understandable. And I, in fact, applaud the Department of Player Safety for taking a stand to say stuff like this won't be tolerated. So, I, in some ways, I wouldn't be surprised to see an appeal, but I don't think that it's really going to be beneficial for anyone involved to spin the wheel and try and reduce it.
Yeah. Last topic I want to touch on with you with this week, Frank, and it was something that was going to touch on last week, but, you know, we were focused very much on the trade and wanted to keep it on the Flames-Flyers trade. But, you know, last week we found out some significant news with where the salary cap's going to go over the next 3 years. It's going to be significant movement in each of the next 3 years to get the cap over $113 million in the not-so-distant future. And one of the things that you pointed out, and one of the things you brought up, was the impact that this might have on Canadian teams because of the discrepancy right now between the U.S. and Canadian dollar and some other things that, that you could point to on either side of the border, you know, what this might mean for the 7 Canadian teams. Just what's your overall read on what this increased salary cap, this rapidly escalating salary cap over the next 3 years, could mean for the 7 teams north of the border?
Well, I'm really concerned from a Calgary-specific perspective, and they're not alone. I think Winnipeg, Ottawa, there's other markets that are, I think, going to be impacted by the way that this cap is increasing, because it's not lost on me or anyone else that the Flames are about $16, $17, $18 million under the cap this season. And look, I think part of that is for good reason, that the Flames, you know, weren't trying to compete for a cup this year. We know what this season was about putting some building blocks in place for them to get to where they want to get to. And I don't think there's any concern or issue about, you know, commitment from ownership to spend to compete in the future. But it becomes a pure math equation at some point. $113 million 3 years from now is $163 million Canadian at today's rate. And it just becomes a math problem of, can you create enough revenue in your own organization to be able to justify and afford the spend that comes with that? And yes, with a new building on the way, I am 100% sure that ticket prices will be increasing and raised, and there's going to be all sorts of new ways to generate revenue that come from a building that Flames fans truly deserve. That said, there's a limit. and fans can only be asked to pay so much, and sponsors can only bring so much to the table. There's not a limitless supply. This isn't, you know, unlike the NFL, where so much of, you know, 60% of revenue that comes into teams comes from national TV deals. 60% of NHL revenue comes from ticket sales directly. It's a model that's totally the opposite. And unless there is some magical new TV deal that comes forth from an international perspective, when I say that, I mean Rogers and Amazon and whoever else steps up to buy the Canadian rights, plus what happens in the next few years with the U.S. rights, which will, you know, be up for bid again soon. Unless there's some massive magical change that I'm not seeing coming, it's going to be difficult for some of these teams to compete in this new environment, because they're just not bringing in the revenue in-house to be able to balance the budget. And part of that is just a victim of the overall health of the league. It's a structure that exists with a 50-50 split that, look, everyone's going to have to get used to what this new increased revenue pool looks like and what it means for everyone. But I say that just to send a warning shot that the increased cap isn't great for everyone. It's great for Toronto and Detroit and the Rangers and Philadelphia and all these other teams that have, you know, we're just now getting to the level in 2025 that some of these teams were spending in 2003-04 when the Flames went to the final in the last before the cap. They're just now getting to that. They, like, the Flyers and Red Wings were spending, and the Rangers are spending $80 million a year.
Yeah.
This year's cap is 88. I don't know that people have an appreciation for how much the salary cap has slowed down player wage growth and how that's enabled the parity that we see because teams were given a level playing field to compete on. And it's just a lot to digest, and some teams are going to have to think long and hard about how they do their business.
The potential for more of a tiered system exists, perhaps, is kind of what I'm reading.
Yeah, and I think there's probably going to be some adjustments for revenue sharing, which some teams are not going to like. And they're going to have to do everything they can, either that or there's going to need to be a system change, where instead of a 50-50 split, a few percentage points are going to have to be chiseled the other way from players to owners, which is a whole different set of, you know, circumstances that, yeah, I think a lot of people would like to try and avoid.
You excited for the Four Nations next week? What's your level of excitement there, my friend?
I am. I think with what has happened politically the last couple weeks, it's added a new couple layers to what's going to be an already pretty raucous U.S.-Canadian game on the 15th on Saturday night at Bell Center. And, yeah, I mean, just the hockey alone should be awesome. It'd be great to get some clarity, though, on some really good players who are banged up right now, like Quinn Hughes, likely missing a couple games, and some others that all of a sudden their Four Nations face-off is in jeopardy. I would love to see these two teams and countries at their very best as much as possible.
Yep, agreed on that front. Well, I'm looking forward to it as well. I appreciate the time, as always, Frank, and we'll do it again next week. Get better, feel better, and, yeah, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for doing this, as always.
Sounds good. See you, Pat.
He's Frank Saravalli. He's our Daily Faceoff NHL insider, and he's brought to you, as always, by our friends at South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave, or visit southtrailchrysler.com. As we're underway this hour on Flames Talk, Wes Gilbertson will join us here in the second half of the hour. The Daily Flames Roundtable is just a couple of minutes away as well. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? shows? Well, Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And now a Tuesday edition of your daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. And it's Pat Steinberg. Wes Gilbertson of Post Media is with us. Hi, Wes.
Hi, buddy.
Welcome to the hour. And let's welcome Derek Wills, the voice of the Flames, to the hour as well to complete our daily Flames Roundtable. All of us hanging out here in the Hot Stove Lounge at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Gents, you know, one thing that you go back into October and November, an area of strength for this Flames forward group was their fourth line. They were getting a lot of good contributions from the fourth line, and especially once Justin Kirkland had made his way onto that line. Like, we were talking about a line that on nights was the difference in winning a depth battle. Over the last month, 2 months, that hasn't been anywhere near the case. And you know, we all know what to expect from Ryan Lomberg on a nightly basis, but that fourth line center role has not been solidified the way that the team would have liked. The fourth line right side role, you know, Walker Duehr had been there. Now Adam Klapka's there. A number of other names have gone through there. Andre Kuzmenko was there at times. It feels like that, and I don't think it's completely unique that a fourth line is one that you see a rotation of players on. But it does feel like at some point they're going to need to get that trio to a higher level than what it's been of late. Any ideas how they could look at improving that?
Well, other than Ryan Lomberg being a mainstay on the left side of that fourth line, there's really been a revolving door at both center and right wing. And we were just watching some lowlights. We were just watching a blooper reel
on
Sportsnet.
I don't know what.
And featured was Andre Kuzmenko when he decided to skate with a broken stick. So just reminded me of the time that he spent playing on the right side of the fourth line. And listen, he's not a fourth line type of player. We all knew that, know that. So that was never going to be a long-term fit for the Flames. We've seen mostly Kevin Rooney playing up the middle, although we've seen a little bit of Clark Bishop of late. We've seen a lot of Adam Klapka of late playing on the right side of that line, but that's really been a revolving door this season. So some consistency would probably help. Something we talked about in yesterday's roundtable, what do the Flames do with their top nine when Connor Zeri comes back? I think the most sensible thing to do would be to, if everybody's healthy, bump Martin Pospisil down to the right side of the fourth line. And I think he would help give that line a true identity. If they could get back to where they were at the start of the season, which might be tough to do, but that line was playing with pace. They were playing with energy. They were getting in on the forecheck, just playing a really simple north-south style of hockey. And they were spending time in the offensive zone. They weren't spending the majority of their time in the defensive zone. And it feels like almost every time they do, this might be a bit of a stretch, but too many times when they're on the ice, they're in the defensive zone, and that leads to a goal against. We've even seen a couple of instances of late where they've been out there for the final minute of a period and have been on the ice for a goal against. So I think really bare minimum what you want and need from that fourth line is to spend significant time in the offensive zone. If you get some goals and points, great. If you don't, at least you're setting the table for the next line that comes on the ice. So I think they have to get back to playing their two other identity, and that's an energy line that's tough to play against, and if they can do that, then I think they'll become effective again.
I asked Ryan Lomberg about this morning, you know, what is the sort of bare minimum to expect from a fourth line, or what has to be the blueprint, and he, Derek, mentioned a lot of what you did. He said, we need to be playing in the offensive zone. We know we're not necessarily going to score a ton of goals, but we have to be playing in the right end because we've had too many nights lately where we've finished minus. And he said it, and he's been a fourth liner his entire NHL career. Like, he understands that job description as well as anybody. And he said, your fourth line absolutely can't be a minus. And, you know, I look back to Saturday night against the Red Wings. Well, they gave up a goal in the first period, and Ryan Huska didn't, and I get it, didn't want to put that line on the ice for most of the remainder of the night. And that sort of carried into Sunday in Seattle. Like, when you're in a back-to-back scenario and you don't have enough trust to play your fourth line 11 or 12 minutes when they're playing more like 6 or 7, you've got a real trust issue. And in the eyes of Ryan Lomberg, who has, as you said, been sort of one of the fixtures on that line this season, that stems from just being a minus too often lately. And so I think it's such a chicken and the egg thing, because I do think that line needs more ice time, and yet it's been tough to reward them with ice time as the minuses pile up. Yeah, you'd love some consistency there. You'd love to win a faceoff and start with the puck occasionally. You'd like to have a little more impact on the forecheck, and maybe eventually you get a Martin Pospisil who can certainly help with that. But right now they've got to figure it out with the personnel they have.
They need to find a way to make it better, whether it's internally or externally. I take a look, for instance, at Kevin Rooney's on ice metrics at 5-on-5. Well underwater when it comes to the shot share or the shot rate. Outscored 16-7 when he's been on the ice at 5-on-5. High danger chances 52-31 for Wes. Expected goals 37.6%.
That's bad.
That's not good.
Yeah.
That's like we're talking about that. There's just, and I use him as an example because he, as Willsie, as you said, while it's been a slight revolving door at center, he's kind of been the most consistent center iceman they've had on the fourth line. And yes, they get a lot of defensive starts, but they're drowning with those defensive starts. And whether it's an internal fix, and, you know, I like the idea of Pospisil. I even think you toy with the idea of putting Pospisil at center there because I don't know if it can be much worse than what you've gotten there. Or at some point trying a Sam Morton as the number four center. Now, none of those guys are right-handed, and it might turn into a situation where you need to potentially look at, like, if they're going to do rentals, fourth line center or a third pair D depth defenseman, those are areas that I think you could get your head around them doing a rental on, and bringing somebody in that is maybe only here for a season or two, as opposed to the 25-year-old, 24-year-old who could be with this team for quite some time. Now, because in both those situations, you're not giving up a significant price. We're not paying a significant price to bring him in. And that's why I say at some point, I don't think it's out of the question, guys, that they might have to look at an external fix for it if they're going to want to truly solve the issue. Because I don't know how confident you are that Pospisil makes big enough of a difference that now it's a much more effective fourth line, or that bringing Morton up would do that. You know, I do think if you can, going in and looking externally is something that they might have to do between now and the trade deadline.
Yeah, I do wish Dryden Hunt played center or at least shot right. Doesn't check either of those boxes, unfortunately, because...
Might not be too late to try.
Maybe not. I mean, could he be much worse than low 40% in the faceoff circle? I just think that Dryden Hunt is a guy who has enough experience in this league and... enough of a track record in this league, you know what you're going to get from him if you call him up. But as we've talked about, Ryan Lomberg's played on the left side of the fourth line in almost every single game this season, and he's been the most consistent guy on that line. The other thing that I would love to see the Flames get from their fourth line, and they were earlier in the season, but they're not anymore, at least not as much, some special teams time. You're not going to see a fourth liner unless his name is Andrei Kuzmenko on your power play. But Kevin Rooney is... now fifth on the team in shorthanded time on ice this season. He's 25th in time on ice, fifth in shorthanded time on ice. And for a while there, it was him and Michael Backlund as the first forward pairing over the boards on almost every penalty kill. Mm-hmm. But they've taken a lot of that shorthanded ice time away from Kevin Rooney. So, Pat, to your point, if there was a fourth-line centerman out there with a right shot that you could get for the right price, I would definitely take a look at that, because if everybody's healthy when Connor Zeri comes back, I really think that Martin Pospisil is the most obvious guy to move onto your fourth line. If you have the right centerman between him and Ryan Lomberg, that could be a pretty tough to play against fourth line, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I do think, you know, guys, when you talk about maybe it's time to look at an external option, I think something that's potentially starting to impact this fourth line is they don't have, you always hear about that push from the bottom or that internal push. Like, I just started scribbling down fourth liners who are not options anymore, right? Like Cole Schwint and Walker Duehr could have been fourth line pieces. You lost both on waivers. Justin Kirkland, really good fourth line piece. Lost him to a season-ending injury. You lost Martin Pospisil in some ways to your top nine equation. Like, if he was going to be a fourth liner, and they're with certain projected lineups, that's where he fit. Well, you lost him to a top nine role. You obviously just traded Jacob Pelche for a couple of guys who you don't plan to play on your fourth line. And so you could use that sort of internal push, whether that's someone that you have to bring in from the outside or a guy like Hunt. Unfortunately, the sort of most obvious options of the minors now are not fourth line type pieces either, right? If you look at a Rory Cairns or a William Stromgren. But I just wanted to touch, Derek, on something you said, and that's Kevin Rooney was doing a bunch of penalty killing for a big part of the season. And I think when you look at the lack of minutes on the fourth line, like you want your fourth liners to specialize in something. And Ryan Lomberg, that's a specialty enough, right? Here's your guy who's going to go stand up for teammates. But if your other fourth liners can't maybe help on the penalty kill or can't have another specialty, it's hard to get those guys minutes. And then I think when you're playing 7 or 8 minutes a game, it's hard to expect them to have much impact.
Yeah. And I talked to Adam Klapka today. Mm-hmm. So Klapka goes from being a first-line player and a very productive one in the AHL to primarily a fourth-line player in the NHL. And I asked him, you know, how tough is it to change roles like that, specifically with the lack of ice time you're getting playing for the Flames as opposed to the Wranglers? And he admitted, it's tough. I mean, you go from playing probably almost 20 minutes on most nights to playing 6 or 7 minutes on most nights.
Right.
And for a big guy like that, I think it can be an even bigger challenge, literally and figuratively. So, yeah, I mean, if you could find the right shot fourth line centerman to bring in who could kill penalties for you and give you an option on that side of the ice, yeah, so that Michael Backlund hasn't taken 180 more shorthanded faceoffs than anybody else on the team and more shorthanded faceoffs than anybody in the league, the guy's faceoff percentage takes a beating, because every time there's an icing call and every time the Flames start a penalty kill, guess who the other team's putting on his offside to take the faceoff? The captain. So I just think, I'm not big on rentals with where the Flames are at, but if you could get a fourth-line centerman or a third-pairing defenseman for the right price, a late-round pick, a conditional pick, whatever, maybe you're taking some salary off the other team's hands, that's certainly something I look at with where this team's at.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, again, it would have to be for the right price.
Yeah.
I would continue to go with status quo if the price is going to be too high and see if you can't solve it internally. But it is something that I think the group is going to need to address. It's our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg. Gents, how much would you be looking at bringing in another left shot D on this team? And that can be externally or that can be filling internally. But how, especially, I mean, even with Kevin Ball, who, let's just assume that Ball doesn't come back until after the break, which I think is a pretty safe assumption now. Let's just say that Ball is ready to return, though, for that first game after the break. Would you still be looking at, and I know that would mean they have 8 defensemen, so you'd have to make some other changes, but would you be looking at some sort of another left shot defenseman, either internally or externally?
Absolutely. And I would look at 2 types. I would look at, number one, a guy who is in the same age range as the 2 guys they just acquired from the Flyers in Joel Farabee and Morgan Frost. So, you know, early to mid-20s. who could play in your top four this season and moving forward. That would be at the top of my wish list. But if I couldn't get that guy, because that guy's not going to be easy to get or inexpensive to get, I would consider adding a depth guy. And one name that we've talked about off the air today is Carson Soucy. He's kind of in the Kevin Ball mold in the sense that he's big and long and, you know, he can be physical. Actually loved how he played in his last couple of seasons with the Kraken. Hasn't been as impactful playing for the Canucks, especially this season. But you bring that type of guy in, I think you could easily slot him on the left side of your third pairing with Braden Pahal to make that a really tough to play against pairing. You look at what the Flames are doing right now. You've got Joel Hanley, who at one point in time was your number eight and then your number seven and then played in your third pairing and then played in your second pairing and is now playing on the left side of your first pairing. And then you've got Jake Bean, who was an eight and then a seven and then had only played on the left side of the third pairing with Braden Pahal. All of a sudden, he's been bumped up and he's playing on the left side of your second pairing with Mackenzie Weegar. So there is a little bit of a lack of depth down the left side of the Flames defense, which is probably the opposite of most teams that are looking for right shot defensemen, but you know, Flames are pretty deep on that side. So yeah, if they could get a top four guy who again is in that early to mid 20s range, who you could insert now and he improves you today and improves you tomorrow, great. If you can't get that guy, I might look at a 6, 7, 8 type of guy who you could use when you needed to.
I absolutely think that they need to add some depth on their blue line, and yet I wouldn't necessarily, guys, be laser focused on the left side. I know they have a bunch of right-handed shots, but I think they need to find a more permanent partner for Mackenzie Weegar, and because of Mackenzie's versatility, I don't care what blade he has on his stick. Yeah, would it be great if it's a lefty? For sure, but I look at Mackenzie Weegar as, like, how many teams have one of their best defensemen with just a constant, rotating door of partners, right? And guys that might be on the second pair one night and in the press box for the next five. Like, it's been Miramanov for a stretch. We've seen Bean in and out there. We've seen everybody. We saw Joel Hanley there. And so I think one of the great things about the flexibility that Weegar gives you with his, you know, he's one of the better, quote-unquote, offside defensemen in the NHL. You have a chance to go find a guy who's going to suit his game. It doesn't have to be a long-term fit, but just find him some stability for this season or for this season and next, perhaps. And give him someone that he's just going to come into the locker room and know who is going to be beside him on the lineup board. Because I think, like, we all always look at the depth and we're sort of, you know, moving around the deck chairs. Okay, well, should it be Miramanov in tonight? Should it be Barry in tonight? And really, you shouldn't be rotating your sometimes spare defenseman onto your second pairing. And I think that's holding you back from getting the best out of Mackenzie Weegar.
So I agree on the premise that I think at some point, whether it's this season or into the offseason, finding that kind of permanent fit or everyday fit for Weegar. I think that is both a short-term and a long-term priority, which is why I think the type of deal that you referenced, Wilsey, in terms of similar to what we saw on Thursday in that trade with the Philadelphia Flyers, you know, a deal like that I think could make a lot of sense. Now, I'm a little bit more I'm a little bit more adamant that Mackenzie Weegar should play the right side. I think you get the most from him on the right. Now, not to say that he plays poorly on his offside, I just think you get more from him on his strong side, and I think he's a better all-round defenseman, better top four defenseman on the right side. And so that's why if you're looking at somebody that could help you now and in the future, you know, whether it's a Zellweger in Anaheim or a Samuelson in Buffalo or somebody like that, I think there are pieces out there that you could realistically acquire. Now, if that isn't available, I do still think that there is a real value. If you want to stick having Bean and Weegar together for the time being, I still think you need then a permanent partner for Pahal, who is preferably a left shot. I don't think Barry on his offside on a regular basis is ideal. I don't think Miramanov's ideal. I think Hanley's great, but I still don't know if Hanley is, no questions asked, a bona fide everyday defender. You know, at some point,
top four,
or definitely not top four. I just wonder if a recall from the American League is the way to go to get a look at a Kuznetsov or get a look at a Solovyov. Those guys are both left shots. Those guys, I think you've been developing them, and they profile as third pair D-men. Maybe at some point, if you could do that, I'd be really interested in seeing it.
Who would you like to see first?
Kuznetsov.
Okay.
Yeah. Just because I think he's a little bit of a better skater. I think fits the way that they would like to play a little bit more. And we've seen Solovyov, and not to suggest that he's been poor. He kind of had to play his off wing for some of his time up here. And also the coaching staff has raved about Kuznetsov and what he's done down there with the Wranglers this year.
Yeah. So we know when Kevin Ball comes back who Rasmus Anderson's partner is going to be. But we don't know who Mackenzie Weegar's partner is going to be, and I think that's the problem here, right?
Yeah. And even if you bring a kid up from the minors, are you putting him beside?
No.
That's the trouble,
no,
right?
Jay, you're going to put him in a pairing with Braden Pahal. So then who are you playing with Mackenzie Weegar? Is it Joel Hanley?
Bean, probably.
Who seems to play well with everybody? Is it Jake Bean, who I think is playing his best hockey as a member of the Flames right now and has done a pretty nice job playing in a top four role? But I don't have the answer to that question because I don't think there is an obvious answer to that question.
If Jake Bean can solidify himself as the answer to that question, it would go a really long way for this team, would it not?
100%. And I don't see a huge difference between Weegar on the left and the right, but the coaches do seem to prefer him on his strong side on the right side. So they must see something that I'm not seeing because they see the game much differently and at a much higher level than I do. But yeah, it's interesting that we're talking about the fourth line and the, I guess, the second pairing in this case, but you know, second or third pairing defenseman being what the Flames need, because I thought, and I think most thought, that they would have greater needs, maybe higher up in their lineup this season. But the fact that a lot of those questions have been answered, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Daily Flames Roundtable starting to wrap things up. He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg, and the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you every day by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.